Parshat Miketz. We never got to conclude last week's parsha. We did the first half of the parsha, we never finished. So we'll quickly introduce this week's parsha with a review of what happened last week. Even though it's Sunday night, we're doing the parsha summary because this is the only class we're going to have this week in honor of Chanukah because of the trip. So this is our only class, so we'll have to review the whole parsha and we won't have a class in methodology this week. So what did we see? What did we see last week? We saw that Yaakov has a son named Yosef, who's 17 years old, who's good looking, who's taking care to have his hair look just right. And he's a big tzaddik, this Yosef. Yosef learns with his father. He's ben zkunim, bar hakim, very smart. He could learn everything his father has to give, all the secrets of the Torah, even though he's a young boy. He could understand things in depth. And his father loves him. His father shows greater affection to him and to the other siblings, and they're jealous, and he has two dreams. He has a dream about the brothers gathering bundles, and he gathers a bundle, and their bundles stand around his and bow to his, and he has a dream about the sun and the moon and the stars bowing down to him. He tells the brothers the dream, and one understanding is that he understood that this dream was like a prophecy, and that he had an obligation to let them know what prophecy he had. Now the brothers are jealous of him. They don't see this as a prophecy. They see this as a dream. You want to rule over us. You want to be king over us. And they hate him even more for what he says, for how he tells the father bad things about them, and for his dreams. And then they go out to watch the sheep in Shechem, and Yaakov sends Yosef to check how they're doing, and before he comes, they already decide they're going to kill him. And when he comes up to them, Shimon grabs him, and Shimon tears his ketones apasim, that special garment that his father made for him, he tears it off of him, and he wants to kill him, and the brothers say, no, we'll throw him into the pit, why should we kill him? Reuben tells them, why should we spill his blood? And Reuben plans on saving him, and ultimately Yosef gets sold to Mitzrayim. Different understandings as to whether the brothers sold him to the Arabs or whether a caravan of Midianites passed by the pit where Yosef was yelling in the pit, save me, and this caravan of Midianites took him out of the pit and they sold him down to Egypt. When the brothers came to the pit, they found it empty. Different opinions as to whether the brothers directly sell him down to Mitzrayim. And when Yosef is down in Mitzrayim in Potiphar's house, Potiphar's wife wants him and he refuses until that fateful day in which he becomes Yosef HaTzadik. No one would have seen, no one would have known, and Yosef lives up to the test. Maybe he had a little help, maybe he saw his father's image at the window, but bottom line, Yosef does not falter, and what happens? Yosef gets sent into jail. Yosef did the greatest act of righteousness, and he gets sent to jail. Now Yosef is in jail, and in jail again he's successful, and he interprets the dreams of two people. The king's two officers, one in charge of drink, gets caught for bringing a cup of wine with a fly in it, and the baker gets caught with bringing bread with a hair in it or a stone in it, different midrashim, what he did wrong. Bottom line, they both get thrown to the pit with Yosef, and Yosef's in charge of them, and Yosef interprets their dreams. They each have a dream, and he interprets their dreams correctly, that the servant who was in charge of bringing Pharaoh's wine, that servant will be reinstated in 3 days, and the other servant will be hung in 3 days, and that's what happens. And Yosef begs the Sar HaMashkim, the officer who's in charge of giving Pharaoh his drinks, he begs him, remember me. When you're by Pharaoh, remember me, do me a favor, get me out of here, because I was unjustly put here. I was sold from my father's homeland, and even here I did nothing wrong, they put me here in this pit, get me out. And the Sar HaMashkim forgets Yosef. Whether he did it on purpose because he was an evil person or because in heavens they wanted Yosef in the pit for 2 more years, different understandings as to what happened here.
3 years.
What?
2 years.
2 years.
It says 3 years.
He was there for 2 more years because he told him, remember me twice. Yeah. How many years was Yosef in the pit in total? It's unclear. According to one medrash, he was there for 10 years in jail.
Yeah, could we do the chronology? And because
he's 30 years old, so 13 years have passed.
Years in
We don't know how many years he was in Potiphar's house.
Oh,
So one medrash says he was in prison 10 years.
Okay.
And we don't know exactly how many years. Bottom line, our parsha begins 2 years later. 2 years after that servant in the Sarah Mashkin got out of jail, and Yosef asked him to remember. And Paro has a dream. And we introduced dreams a little bit last week. We'll go a little bit more in depth this week. Our sages tell us three kings had a dream. Paro had a dream, and in his dream he dreamt about the seven cows coming out of the Nile. Good-looking cows. What's a good-looking cow? Fat cow, healthy cow. Another set of seven cows come out, and they consume them, and the second set of cows are bad-looking. They look very skinny. They look emaciated. And even after they consume the fat cows, they still look emaciated. And Paro, as part of his dream, also gets an interpretation. He dreams another dream. He dreams about seven stalks and another set of seven stalks. The first ones are full and fat, and the second ones are thin, as though they've been beaten by wind. And the second set of stalks fully cover the first set of stalks, even though they're so beaten and wiped out. And again, he gets an interpretation to the dream, and when he awakens, he doesn't remember what the interpretation is. He remembers the dream, but he can't remember the interpretation. So he's very upset, and he calls in all his wise men and his warlocks and everyone who could try and interpret the dream, and they give him all kinds of interpretations. One says you're going to conquer seven cities, and one says you're going to marry seven wives, and different interpretations, but each one doesn't strike the right chord. He says, that's not it. I got the interpretation, and that's not it. But Paro isn't the only king that had a dream. Nebuchadnezzar also had a dream. But when Nebuchadnezzar awoke, Nebuchadnezzar, we're talking about after the destruction of the first temple. Nebuchadnezzar was the one who destroyed the first temple. So we're talking about 600 years later. Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and he forgets the dream and the interpretation. He dreams a dream, and he dreams the interpretation, and he forgets them both. So he's twice as upset. And he calls in all his wise men and tells me, tell me, what did I dream? And they say, how could we know what you dreamt? He says, you don't tell me, I'm going to kill you all. And he starts killing out all his wise men until Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, they come to him, and Daniel says, I'll tell you what your dream was, and I'll tell you the interpretation. And of course, he gets it right. And then there was another king in the time of the Gemara, that the Gemara says, he came to Chazal, and he told them, tell me what I'm going to dream. I want you to tell me what I'm going to dream. He hasn't dreamt it yet. So there was a wise man named Rav Shmuel Bar Shela, and he went to the king's maid, and he asked her, what's the king thinking about? And she said, he's hoping that the king of Persia will come here so he could attack him and take his daughter. So he told him, that's what you're dreaming, and it's going to come true. So all day he was thinking, gee, it'll come true, and that's what he was thinking all day. So that's what happened at night. He dreamt about it. The Gemara says, we dream at night what we think about by day. So what value is there to our dreams? So the Gemara says, a dream could have value. Not every dream has value. The Gemara says, a dream that's repeated twice is a true dream. A dream in which the interpretation to the dream is given is also a true dream. And a dream that is dreamt in the very beginning of the morning, Nalos HaShachar, that's also a true dream. Those are three signs the Gemara gives us as to whether a dream is true or not. Now, Paro had the same dream twice. Different version, but he had it twice.
The same night.
What?
In the same night.
Yeah. And
because Yosef had also two dreams, but not in the same night.
Right. So Paro's upset. He doesn't know what the definition of his dream is. And he wants to find out. So finally, his officer, who's in charge of giving him to drink, he tells him, look, I want to remind you, once upon a time I did something wrong. You put me in jail, and I had a dream together with the other officer who you put in jail at the same time, the one in charge of your food, the baker. And together with us in jail, there was, and now listen to how he describes Yosef, Nar, a lad, not too smart, Ivri, he's not even from our people, he's from the other side of the river. Eved, he's a servant. You can never appoint him as anything special. He was once a servant. And this is how he introduces Yosef. This is the thanks he gives back to Yosef. And he says, look, we told him our dreams, and he figured out what the interpretation was. Whatever he said, that's what happened. And our sages say that that's the way dreams work. that the dreams will come to fruition the way they're interpreted. The dream will come to fruition the way the interpreters interpret it. And we discussed that last week. And so Paro sends to take Yosef out of jail. How does our parsha begin? Vayhi miketz shnasayim yomim. At the end of 2 years, our sages tell us that ketz is a very important word. Ketz means an end, like katze. We know ketz sam lachoshech. God put a limit to the darkness. There's an end. And our sages told us, people have to remember, there are three things that have an end. Jail, sickness, and galut, being in exile. These are three things that when a person is in them, a person could think it's over. They consume a person's thoughts, and they consume all a person's emotion. And our sages reminded us that these three things have an end, and that's how our parsha begins. At the end of these 2 long years, Pharaoh had a dream, and this dream is going to be the introduction to Yosef's getting out of jail. Pharaoh dreamt about the Nile. The Nile is the source of Egypt's sustenance. On the one hand, it's a blessing, because the Nile runs and runs and runs, and they had irrigation ditches from the Nile. But on the other hand, they relied on the Nile's overflow. That was how the irrigation ditches got full, that the Nile overflowed. And historically, one of the ways that the priests and the kings maintained control over the Egyptians was by controlling the calendar. The fact that the Nile overflowed based upon the cycle of the moon and the sun, and knowing when the position of the moon and the sun would be, how full moon, half a moon, and that causes all the rivers, high tide, low tide, right? The position of the sun and the moon. They control how high the tide is. So the priests, they kept a good calendar, and they knew exactly when it would be high tide and when it would be low tide, when the Nile would overflow and when it wouldn't. And then they said, you know, we control the Nile. We're gods. And that was one of the great strengths in Egypt, and that's why the Egyptian calendar was one of the first calendars that was very, very precise. The Egyptian calendar, they needed it for their sustenance. So in Pharaoh's dreams revolve around the Nile. The Navi says that Pharaoh is Hatanim Gadol, he's the great snake, Harovetz Betoch Yorav, who situates himself within the Nile. Haomer, Pharaoh says, Li Yoriv Ani Asitini, I own the Nile, I made myself, I didn't come from parents, I'm a god. That's how Pharaoh presented himself to the people. And this is going to have more relevance when we get to the story of Moshe and Aaron, in a few parshios, in the beginning of Parsha Shmos, when they come to Pharaoh. So Pharaoh dreams about the Nile, and now it's time to get an interpretation for the dream. So they call Yosef from the pit. Yosef has been in jail, so he grew his beard long, he grew his hair long, he wasn't dressed well enough to come before a king. Our sages say that when a person's in jail, even if he's in a Jewish jail, then chances are he's going to grow his hair long. Even though the Jews might tell him, you're a lot of shave. Shabbos is coming up, Yom Tov is coming up. But it's not their hair. It's a person's not going to be in jail and shave and take haircuts. It's part of how a person feels. And that's why halachically, if a person gets out of jail on Chol HaMoed, he's allowed to take a shave, he's allowed to take a haircut, because we say he wasn't expected to shave and take a haircut in jail. Even though he might have been permitted to do it, we don't expect that of him. So Yosef comes out of jail, and they give him a shave, they give him new clothes, and they have him run out of the pit to Pharaoh. The king's waiting. Why was he running? So there was a Hasid Rebbe known as the Kutsk Rebbe, the Rebbe of city Kutsk, and he said a beautiful Dvar Torah. He said that everything in this world is decreed in heaven above, and it's decreed down to the second. So in heavens they decreed that Yosef was supposed to be in jail till this second. Now that second was up, they have to run. He has to run. He's got to get out of there. That's it. It's over. In heaven they decreed it's over. So that's why Yosef had to run. And that's something to remember. We sometimes think it's a bottomless pit. When we're stuck in a tunnel, we don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. So we have to know that in heaven, like we said before, miketz, there's a ketz, there's an end. And when that end comes, then like Yosef, they'll run us out of it. So they bring Yosef before Pharaoh, and Pharaoh tells him, I dreamt a dream, no one could explain to me what it means, and I heard that you could interpret any dream, just hear it and you interpret it. And Yosef tells Paro, no, I'm not the one that has this great strength. God is the one that will be able to answer Paro, either yes or no. God's the one that's going to answer. So Paro tells him the dream, and Yosef interprets the dream. He tells him, look, the dream is, the two dreams are the same. They're telling you the same message. They're telling you that you're going to have 7 years of great wealth, great sustenance in the city in Egypt, and then you're going to have 7 years of famine, and all the sustenance that you had during the first 7 years will be completely forgotten, just like the seven skinny cows ate the seven fat cows and you couldn't tell that they had eaten them. So it's going to be a very bad famine the next 7 years. First you'll have 7 years of plenty, and then the following 7 years are going to be a very bad famine. And the reason you had the dream twice is to tell you that God's ready to begin and God's rushing to start this. And now he adds a word of advice to Paro. And our sages discuss whether what Yosef did here was right or wrong, the fact that he gave Paro advice. He tells Paro, you have to appoint people on the land and divide up the land of Egypt. During the next 7 years, you have to start amassing tremendous storage houses filled with food, and you'll be in charge of it, and that'll sustain the land during the 7 years of famine. Paro, his servants hear this, and Paro says, where will we find such a smart man, a man that has God's spirit in him? And therefore, Paro tells Yosef, you know what, you'll be our leader. You'll be the one who will be in charge of taking care of all this great idea that you had to divide up the land. So Rabbi Tendler once quoted from a Hasidic Rebbe, what did Yosef say that was so intelligent? So he interpreted the dream. But it wasn't about that Paro got so excited. He said, divide up the land and gather everything. What was so smart about it? So he said, our tendency is that when things go well, so we think, ooh, I got a raise, I got a bonus, I got more money, so you think, I could buy this, now I could afford this. A person automatically thinks, once he got more money, what he could spend it on. And it takes a very smart person to recognize that when things go well, it doesn't mean that tomorrow they'll go well. It means that now that they're going well, I have to put money in savings because I don't know what tomorrow is going to be. The Pasuk says in Mishlei, "Al tivtach biyom machal." Don't have faith in what's going to be tomorrow. Ki lo teidam hayeled yom. You don't know what the day is going to bring forth. You don't know what tomorrow is going to be. Today you have a job. You don't know what will be tomorrow. So Yosef's wisdom was that when they're going to have a year where everything's good, and then the next year everything's also good, and then a third year where everything's great, 7 years straight, everything's going to go well. Yosef tells Paro, you can't rely on the people to put money aside. It's not enough to tell people, put some food aside. You can't rely on people. People's tendency is when things go well, especially year after year, so they think, gee, it's going to go well forever, and they keep spending the money or using the food they have. What you have to do is you, as the king, your responsibility now is to set up storage houses. And you take in and store and tax them. The more money they'll have, you keep taxing them. Take as much grain as you can, put it in the storage houses. That was Yosef's wisdom, that he recognized that people are not going to be able to save up money, save up food for a time when it won't be good. People can't live during 7 years where there's so much plenty and think there'll one time be a time when there's a famine. And we have to think in that perspective. We as the kings, you as the king, Paro, you have to think with the perspective that there's a famine coming. So Paro tells him, you do it. You'll be in charge of my house. You'll be in charge of everything. The only thing is the throne. I'm still Paro. And Paro appoints Yosef in charge of the land of Mitzrayim. He takes off his ring, which was a sign of, that's like the ring you seal things with. Signet ring, he gives it to Yosef and tells him, now you're in charge. I'm the king, but I'm putting you in charge. And he gives him clothing of royalty, and they take him for a fancy ride around town, and everyone calls before him Avreich. Avreich is an acronym. It stands for Av. It's two words, really. It's a conjunction, not an acronym. Avreich. Av means like a father. He's wise like an old man. And Reich, like Rach, he's young in years. And he was appointed over Mitzrayim. Now, let's go back 2 weeks. If you recall, 2 weeks ago we saw how Dina was taken forcibly by Shechem. What happened after they rescued Dina from Shechem? So our sages tell us that the siblings said, you're pregnant now? We don't want your daughter is part of our family. Your daughter came from something terrible that happened. Everyone's going to say that we condoned it. We don't want her here. And she had problems with the family. Until finally, different midrashim, exactly how it worked, they took that girl that was born from that communion between Dina and Shechem, and they sent her down to Mitzrayim. And when they sent her down to Mitzrayim, she had some locket, she had something on it that inside was inscribed something that identified who she was. Now, she was taken into the house of Potiphar. Potiphar's wife, she couldn't have children, or Potiphar couldn't have children. And they brought her up as though she was their daughter. Now, Yosef is being appointed second in command. And people are going to say, oh, you remember Yosef, you remember that story, what happened with him and Potiphar. So what's the cleanest way of showing that there was nothing wrong there? That Potiphar, Paro tells Potiphar, your daughter, you're giving her as Yosef's wife. That's going to prove to everyone that really Yosef's clean. So they took Potiphar's so-called daughter, and Yosef married her. Now she was known as Osnat, and when Yosef married her, he discovered that really she's his cousin, she's his niece. And then Yosef recognized that even here in Mitzrayim, God is watching over him. Correct. So Yosef was always concerned, I don't want to marry a non-Jew here in Mitzrayim. And when he got Osnat, he discovered, oh, that she's Jewish. And there's a medrash that says that when they took Yosef riding around town, so all the girls got excited and they all threw something. And Osnat, she had nothing, but she had this little locket that her grandfather Yaakov put on her when he sent her out. So she threw that, and that fell into Yosef's lap. And he looked at it, and he saw, oh, Hebrew. And he saw that, hey, I got to find out which girl threw this at me. And he traced it back, and he found Osnat, and that's how he married her. It's another medrash. So anyways, Yosef marries Osnat, and Paro changes Yosef's name to Tzofnat Paneach. He's the one that could figure out all the things. Tzofnat, like Tzafun, things that are hidden. Paneach, he could figure out. And that's also a way of showing that Paro rules over him. Changing someone's name is a sign of ownership. And he has to marry Osnat. Now, here Osnat is called the daughter of Potiphera, Kohen On. Who's Potiphera? Our sages tell us that's Potiphar. Why is he suddenly called Kohen On, the priest of On, the city of On? Beforehand he was Rabba Tabachim, the chief executioner. So they say, we had the medrash that says that Potiphar bought Yosef because of his good looks. He wanted him for himself. And then God sent a malach that caused Potiphar to be castrated. So after he was castrated, so he no longer had the urges of a regular man. So what could he do with his life? So he decided he's becoming a priest. So he became a priest. He left the job of being chief executioner and he became a priest. And that's why Potiphar over here is called Kohenon. Yosef is 30 years old. And he starts passing through Mitzrayim and setting up storage houses. The Mitzrayim all joke, this fool of a king we got, everything's going to rot. 7 years, he thinks it's all going to last. They all laugh. But they know the prophecy's coming true. Yosef said 7 years it's going to be good. They see it's good. So they start setting up their own storage houses. And in their storage houses, everything gets eaten by worms. And Yosef, he had some wisdom. Our sages say he took the dirt from each city that he took the crops from. He took, with the crops, he took dirt from that city. And he stored it with its own dirt. And that dirt prevented worms from coming, however that works. And he started having great storage houses. Now, Yosef gathered everything. And he had two children, the Pasuk states, before the famine came. From Osnat, he had two children. The eldest was called Menashe, and the second one was called Ephraim. And the 7 years of plenty were up. Why does the Pasuk stress that he had these two children before the famine? So we learn from this that when there's a famine, a husband and wife have to separate themselves. The halacha says that when the world is in a time of sorrow, people have to recognize and lead their lives like it's a time of sorrow. A person can't come home and say, gee, I'm okay. I'm king of Mitzrayim. I have these storage houses. No. Even the king of Mitzrayim, when things are going bad, he has to separate from his wife. The world is in famine. The world is in a time of sorrow. This is true in a time of war, in a time of famine. Now, this is only true if a person was not yet, if a person has not yet fulfilled the mitzvah of Pru Urvu. If a person hasn't yet had a son and a daughter, then he's still supposed to be with his wife because he still has a mitzvah to perform. But once a person has performed that, then he's supposed to feel the sorrow of the world. So now we have 7 years of famine. In Egypt, there's still food. Slowly the food dwindles, and the Mitzrim come to Paro, and he tells them, go to Yosef. They come to Yosef, and they're not happy with what Yosef tells them. Two understandings in Chazal why they're not happy about what Yosef tells them. One understanding is, he simply said, look, you want to eat my food? Well, you have to thank God for my food, so make a bracha. And they said, no, we're serving our idols, we're not willing to pray to your God. So he said, okay, no bracha, no food. So they went back to Paro. And Paro said, look, you do whatever Yosef says, I'm not interfering. The other understanding says, Yosef says, you know, my God isn't willing to feed people who have this filthy foreskin. You're Arelim. You're uncircumcised. You want the food, circumcise yourself. Why was it so important for Yosef to have the Mitzrim circumcised? So, if you recall, a month and a half, 2 months ago, we had a whole shiur on the importance of circumcision. And one understanding in circumcision was that it causes a person to have more control, more self-restraint. He still has the ability and the pleasure that a normal human being has, but it gives him more control over himself, over his physical urges. The Mitzrim were known in this time and in the times after this. Throughout the Tanakh, the Mitzrim were known for being immoral people. People who weren't faithful to their wives, to their husbands. The Navi calls them Asher Zilmat, Susim Zilmatam. The Navi compares them to a horse, who, okay, when we learn the Navi, we'll discuss that. The Mitzrim are constantly, they're called Shtufezima, people that are constantly one-track minded. So Yosef is helping them become better people. He's helping them control themselves. There's a famine, they don't have much of a choice. Paro tells them, look, whatever Yosef says, you gotta do. So they do it. And Yosef starts selling them the food. Yosef was different than any other king. Any other king would have said, I gotta keep the food for my people. Yosef said, I'm going to let other countries buy the food. People are hungry, they need to eat. But Yosef wanted to ensure that his brothers come to him. Yosef had a prophecy. He interpreted the dreams as prophecy, that his brothers still have to come and bow before him. So Yosef enacted the following three laws. The first law he enacted was that no servant could come into Egypt. And that was so that the brothers won't send their servants to Egypt to buy the food. They themselves would have to come and buy the food. The second law he enacted was that you can't come into Egypt with two donkeys. You can only come in with one. This was to ensure that people don't buy a lot of food and go out and sell it, and then the brothers won't have to come into Egypt. They'll go and buy from a merchant. This was a way of ensuring that all the food stayed in Mitzrayim. You could come, buy enough food for your family, one donkey load, and go back. And the third law he enacted was that when you come by food, you have to write your name, your father's name, and your grandfather's name. And this was, again, a way of ensuring that people don't try tricking. They go to this cellar and to that cellar, to this storage house, to that storage house. They have a complete record. And Yosef himself and his son Menashe would go over the record. And he explained this to the people. He said, look, I want to ensure that everyone has enough food. If I let people buy more, then I'm going to run out. I have to ensure that everyone gets. And I want everyone to have enough and no one to have too much. So that's why I'm limiting it. His real plan was to ensure that food doesn't leave Egypt so that the brothers are going to have to come and buy. If everyone could only take enough food to feed his own family, then his 11 brothers, they're all going to have to come down to Mitzrayim to buy their own food.
But Yaakov was still blessed with food all this through this time of the famine.
So there are two understandings in the Midrash. Yaakov tells his sons, he tells them, why should you stand out? So there are two understandings in the Midrash. One understanding says they had enough food, but Yaakov said, look, all our neighbors are traveling to Egypt to get food. They're looking at us and they'll be jealous. So you have to also go to Egypt so they don't look at you as different. And that's an important thing we learn from Yaakov. Even when a person has it good, he has to, on the outside, not make people look at him as different. A person should always try to look like everyone else. We say a person should buy clothing that he doesn't look too good and not too bad. A person shouldn't go in tatters, but a person also shouldn't stand out that he's the best dressed guy in the crowd. He's supposed to be in average, modest clothing. The other understanding says that Yaakov told his sons, he said, you go down to Egypt now and buy food. We need food. But when you go to Egypt, you're 11 And then he sent 10. You're 10 powerful, good-looking men. If you all come in as one caravan, everyone's going to look at you. Wow. Don't forget, they're white and the Egyptians are black. So they really stand out when they come down to Mitzrayim. So Yosef, as Yaakov tells them, don't go together. Enter the city through different gates. The brothers agree that when they're going, they have a different plan in mind. They're going to look for Yosef. So they enter 10 different gates and they start searching. And they tell themselves, look, he was a good-looking guy. A good-looking guy, so we think it's a plus. Our sages tell us that being good-looking is a plus. Like we see the Torah tells us, the imahot, the matriarchs, were all good-looking. But on the other hand, it's a minus. It limits a person. A person automatically has the yetzer hara of gava. A person has the tendency to be more haughty. Feels if he's good-looking, he's something. It has nothing to do with him, but he automatically feels that way. When he looks in the mirror, he feels good. The Gemara says that two Amoraim were discussing, and one said, you know, I only got where I got to because I wasn't good-looking, because I looked bad. So the other one answered him. He said, I'm good-looking, look where I got. So he told him, yeah, and if you were bad-looking, you know how much more you'd get. You'd be a much bigger Talmid Chacham. That's how much you got, because you're good-looking. So it's not that a person who's good-looking can't get anywhere, but it means he's going to have a harder time getting anywhere. We think of it as a plus. It is a plus, but it's also a minus. It makes someone's life harder. So the brothers thought to themselves, Yosef's a good-looking guy. Last time we saw him, what was he doing? He was making sure to be good-looking. He was taking care of his hair. He was Yosef. So they say, where are we going to find Yosef? We're going to find him in the marketplace where there are women for hire. That's where we're going to find Yosef. So they start going to those marketplaces. The first day they enter town, Yosef gets a report. The brothers enter town. He looks, and he sees each one reported. I'm the son of Yaakov, the son of Yitzchak. So he tells all the merchants, close up all your shops. We're leaving one shop open. And then he tells that one guy in charge of that storage house, he says, look, when these 10 come to you, you detain them. They have to come to me. They don't come. Day one goes by, they don't come. Day two goes by, they don't come. Day three goes by, they don't come. Yosef decides he's not waiting. He tells Paro, I need 70 men, I gotta catch some bandits. So Paro sends him 70 soldiers, and he sends those 70 soldiers to look for the 10 brothers. And where do they find them? They find them in those marketplaces. So they bring him before Yosef. They all come before Yosef, and Yosef standing as king, and they all bow before him. What was Yosef's first dream? The bundles all bowing down to his bundle. They're all coming for wheat. They're all coming for food. They're all bowing down to him. The first dream is coming true. The brothers come and they bow before Yosef, and Yosef sees they don't recognize him. When he left, he was a 17-year-old. Didn't have a full beard. Now he's got a long beard. He's Yosef. When he left them, they were much older. Not all of them. Some of them also grew, but together with everyone, he figured out who everyone was. So Yosef tells them, you're spies. He said, what do you mean? We're not spies. So he says, what happens? You enter town, you have to go through 10 different gates. You're all from the same family. You came here to see what's bad with the land. And anyways, what are you doing in those marketplaces, you filthy people? That's where you go. So the brothers say, no, it's the truth. We were missing a brother. We went looking for him, and our father told us not to enter through one gate. So he says, no. You came to see how you could attack the land. So they set a claim. They said, what?
He says, you're spies.
You're spies. You're spies. You want to see how to attack. That's why you came through 10 different gates, to see where are the weak points in the land.
They said only, they only replied, it's not true. Don't say this. Because they thought, indeed, in this time, it was not usual. There were not so much spies, as it was not possible. 10 brothers, the same father, had the same thing, or good in the same.
So that was one claim they told him. They said, would one father let his 10 sons go as spies? We wouldn't do that. And Yosef tells them, no. I'm telling you, you're spies. You went looking for your brother? Yeah, okay, fine. We're going to test you out. I swear by Paro, I'm not letting you out until I see that one brother. You're saying you left one behind, Binyamin. Yaakov said, I'm not sending him. I'm scared what's going to happen on the way. Send one back, fetch that brother, and you guys, I'm putting you in jail. Let's see if you're telling the truth. He puts them in jail for 3 days. Our sages say, why did he put him in jail for 3 days? Because he was in that pit for 3 days. So he was having trouble with them for 3 days before they finally sold him. So they put him in jail for 3 days. They entered jail. They didn't think anything. They said, oh, what a vicious king. But on the third day, suddenly he showed them a kind face. Suddenly he told them, you know what? I fear Elohim. I fear God. Huh? Now they're scared. Until now they thought, okay, Egyptian king, what does he know? But now he's talking to them their language. He's not talking Hebrew, he's talking Egyptian, and he has a translator in between. But he's telling them, I fear God. He's not saying, I fear Pharaoh, I fear the Nile, I fear the sheep, I fear the ox. No, he's talking about God. And he comes to them and he says, I fear God. This is what we're going to do. If you're telling me the truth, I'm putting one of your brothers in jail, and the rest of you I'm sending home. I'm scared. Your families are hungry. I don't want them to die. Now they got scared. Now they said, wait a second. Then he's not just a mean king. Then he really thinks we're doing something wrong. He didn't do this just because he wants to find an excuse to give us trouble. Now the brothers got scared. Who does he take? He takes the brother who tore his garment off of him, the brother who was going to kill him, Shimon. Takes him to put him in jail. Our sages say that when it came time to put him in jail, he told Pharaoh, I need 70 soldiers. And when those 70 soldiers tried coming close to Shimon, they didn't stand a chance. So he sent his son Menashe. He said, okay, you go take care of it. So Menashe walked over to Shimon, and he had the same strength as Shimon had. He was from the same family. He bent his head over and threw him into jail. And Shimon wasn't ready for that. So Shimon went to jail, and the brothers weren't ready for it either. So he tells him, you bring back your little brother, and we'll see if you're telling me the truth. And now that they saw that Yosef wasn't treating them as a vicious king, illogically accusing them, now Shimon turns to Levi and he says, you know what? It's our fault. This is because of what we did to our brother. They don't know that Yosef's understanding. We saw Yosef begging us, please let me go. We didn't listen. That's why all this is happening to us. And Reuven turns to them and he tells them, didn't I tell you? Don't do this to the kid. And you weren't willing to listen to me. And now look, We're getting paid back for his blood. Question. We're not going to answer this today. Why did Reuven tell them that? That's like, I told you so. You know, what do you gain by telling someone, I told you so? What was Reuven's point by saying this? And that I'm leaving you to ponder. So they didn't know that Yosef was understanding them. And when Yosef hears all this, he goes to the back room and he cries. And he takes Shimon and puts him in prison. When they fill their sacks, Yosef tells the person, put their money in there. They're on their way back. And one of them opens his sack. Levi opens his sack, and he sees that there's money there. Everyone got scared. He said, what's God doing to us? The Gemara says, anything that the prophet said really shows up in the Torah. So the Gemara says that Rav Yochanan was learning in Beis Medrash, and he said, the verse says in Mishlei, Ivelet Adam Tesalef Darko, a person's foolishness, the things that a person does wrong, Tesalef Darko, causes his path to be all messed up. We do bad things, and then things go bad for us. Ve'al Hashem Yizaf Libo. And when things go bad, the man turns to God and says, God, what'd you do to me? So Rav Yochanan thought about that verse and he said, where does that verse show up in the Torah? So Reish Lakish, his little boy, Reish Lakish was Rav Yochanan's brother-in-law, so his nephew was there and he left. He said, what do you mean? It says so in the Torah. So he said, where is it saying in the Torah? So he said, it says in the Torah, the brothers all saw the money. They saw the money back in the sack. They're on their way back home. They open up the sack. One brother, Levi, sees the money in the sack. And what does he say? What did God do to us? So he says, you see, that's exactly what it says in Mishlei. They did it to themselves, and they blamed God. They come back to Yaakov, and Yaakov sees that Shimon isn't there. So Yaakov starts thinking, gee, they did away with Yosef. Yaakov always suspected the brothers that maybe they killed Yosef. And now Yaakov was thinking, maybe they killed Shimon too. So Yaakov didn't know what to do. Yaakov had another thought. Yaakov was thinking, maybe they didn't kill Shimon. Maybe they told Shimon, you hide. We'll make up this whole story, we'll tell Yaakov, and then we'll get him to send Binyamin. And that way we'll be able to finish Binyamin off, and there'll be nothing left from Rachel's children, and we'll be able to inherit everything. Yaakov didn't trust him. Now don't forget, Yaakov didn't have Ruach HaKodesh. From the day Yosef was gone, Yaakov was in mourning, and God doesn't appear to Yaakov. They come back to Yaakov, and they start opening their sacks. And as they're opening their sacks, after they hear this whole story, after they tell Yaakov the whole story, they see each one got their money back. And when Yaakov sees that each one came back with his money, then Yaakov recognizes that they're not making up stories. Because how'd they get all the food and get their money back? So they tell Yaakov what happens, and Yaakov says, I'm not letting Binyamin go with you. His brother died somehow when he was on his way to you, and now you want to take him? No. Yosef's gone, Shimon's gone, you want to take Binyamin? Look at what I've suffered already, I'm not willing to do it. And Reuven tells him, you know what, Dad? If you think we're plotting something, you could kill my two sons if I don't bring him back. Give him to me, I'm telling you, I promise I'm going to bring him back. Yaakov says, Binyamin was, yeah, he wasn't a baby. He was, I don't remember his exact age, but figure he was 34 years old. He was born after Yosef. Yosef at this point was 39. So how do you know he was 34? I don't know. I have to do the math a different time. He was over 17. We know that he was over 20. How old he was exactly, I don't know. So Yaakov says, what do you mean? They're all my children and my grandchildren. I don't want anything to happen to Binyamin, and I don't want anything to happen to your children. If that's your promise to me, then I'm certainly not sending my son with you. So our sages say that at this point, Yehuda turned to the brothers and he said, you know what? He's not giving in. Calm down. The food will run out. He won't have a choice. Why should we fight him now? Let's wait. Let's wait till the food runs out. What was Yaakov worried about? So we brought what our sages say, that he was concerned. He said he was concerned, what are the brothers going to do to him? But the pasuk doesn't say that openly. The pasuk says Yaakov told the brothers, if he goes on the journey, you know, something bad might happen on the journey. Well, why, if we believe in Hashgacha Pratit, if we say that God watches over every step we take, so why should something bad happen on the way that won't happen when he's at home? So we have a tradition that Hasatan mekatreg b'shat sakana. When a person puts himself in a time of danger, then the satan can have claims in heaven. So long as a person's not in a time of danger, so the satan has to have a great claim in order to do something bad to a person. But the second a person puts himself in a situation of danger, a person walks under a tree that's about to fall, a person walks in a place where they're shooting, person puts himself in a place of danger, he walks into a place where there are sick people and there are germs flying all around. So then our sages say in heaven, they judge him. They say, well, he endangered himself. So is he fit to be saved or is he not fit to be saved? And a person brings upon himself this judgment. It's a new judgment. A person judged on Rosh Hashanah, they might say, yeah, the guy should have a great year. But when he puts himself in a situation of danger, then they open up his books again. Then they say, wait a second. Is he deserving right now to be saved from the situation of danger? And this is something that people sometimes forget. People say, Ashgacha, whatever God wants, that's what's going to happen. It doesn't matter. I can travel wherever I want. Someone said that right after the Intifada started, and he traveled to Kever Yosef, and they killed him. But before he went, he told his friends, he said, what do you mean? If God wants me to die, I'll die here. And if I'm not supposed to die, I won't die there. That's foolish. We see from this parasha, we see not that way. And we see throughout Tanakh, not that way. A person is responsible to do ishtadlut to stay alive, and sometimes his staying alive is going to be contingent on what kind of ishtadlut, how hard he works to stay alive. So Yaakov says, I don't want to place my son in a situation of danger. Binyamin, his mother, his brother, they all died on the road. They don't have good luck on the road. I'm scared.